There's a thousand further women living out there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas! Viva!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. I'm John Katzlamitas. I write the Cats Report in the Las Vegas Sun, lasvegassun.com, and Las Vegas Weekly, lasvegasweekly.com. And I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group, including The Sunday, which comes out on The Sunday, except when it comes out on The Saturday. The Saturday. I'm doing my Trisha McCrone impression there because Trish is in Montana. She's in Montana this week, so I'm flying solo. She's celebrating the 80th birthday of her mother, the wonderful Marilyn McCrone, the matriarch of the McCrone family, one of my favorite people. She's just a wonderful, wonderful woman, as if she's part of my own family. So happy belated birthday to her. It was Tuesday this week. And they're up there on Flathead Lake celebrating. And so I'm going alone, as I mentioned earlier. And I will direct everybody to my column in the Cats Report on the Las Vegas Sun this week. I wrote about Penn and Teller and their run on Broadway. They are ending on Sunday, and this show couldn't have been more successful for these guys. It is turning a profit, for starters, beginning a week ago Friday. They started making money. They recouped their investment. So every show that they have done since then, and that's more than a week's worth, is turning pure money for Penn and Teller, and that is the important mark of success on Broadway. I would say it's well more than probably $2 million for them, and probably even more than that. Rave reviews, sold out shows, their media blitz has been unparalleled. And as Penn texted me to me, that it was a great symmetry between Broadway, their return to Broadway after 25-year absence, and their stay in Las Vegas. They've run full circle, and they're coming back on August 22nd to celebrate their return. Their show Fool Us has been picked up for another season on the CW, and they're happy about that. And two of the greats, and they every inch of success they've earned and deserve. And I think today, if I'm not mistaken, is their 40th anniversary of performing together. So we're going to catch up with them when they get back and hopefully have Penn on the show. We've interviewed him a couple of times on Cats of the Dish, including one notorious interview where I went about 20 minutes long in their dressing room and I lost track of time. We still have 20 minutes of Penn Jillette somewhere in our archives. So that is all happening. And we've got more news out of Red Rocks Lounge, too, where David Perico and his Pop Strings outfit is leaving the room on August 29th. They didn't like the wall that's been erected in that room, and so have decided to leave and seek more friendlier pastures for their music, musically friendly. So know that's in the column. There's all kinds of other stuff happening there at the Cats Report on the LasVegasSun.com website. With that, I'm going to plug my buddy Josh Bell, who's coming up. He's going to be talking about movies, as he does every week, one of my favorite journalists. And then after that, we've got someone I'm very familiar with who's performed in Las Vegas for a very long time. He's known as the Pitbull of Comedy, Bobby Slayton, who's got a set of dates coming up at the South Point Showroom on August 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. So stick around. I know I will.
Hey, this is Carrot Top. I'm sitting home with no pants on listening to Cats on the Dish.
Soviet architect traveling to Rome would never dress his woman in the clothes you tried to put her in.
You tried to dress her like someone on your side thinks someone dressed behind the Iron Curtain.
She's from behind the Iron Curtain.
That doesn't mean she wants to bring it with her.
That's Henry Cavill and Armie Hammer as secret agents Napoleon Solo and Ilya Kuryakin in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. Based on the 1960s TV series and set in that same time period, U.N.C.L.E. follows an American CIA agent and a Soviet KGB agent forced to team up to stop Nazis from acquiring a nuclear bomb.
Does this mean anything to you? It's part of centrifuge for refining uranium. I am not staying here.
Where are you going to go?
Director Guy Ritchie throws buckets of style onto the screen, including gorgeous outfits, lavish locations, lively music, and attractive performers, but he fails to generate an interesting plot or bring any further dimensions to the characters. I give The Man from U.N.C.L.E. 2.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week in limited release at the Regal Village Square is the documentary Cartel Land, about two very different vigilante groups fighting drug cartels on either side of the Mexican-American border. Director Matthew Heineman gets astonishingly close to heated gun battles in Mexico, and he uses careful editing to show how both groups are ultimately almost as ruthless and menacing as the criminals they're up against. Cartel Land is a vivid and sometimes infuriating portrait of a seemingly unwinnable battle. I give Cartel Land 3.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. On the phone with me now is the man who has certainly earned the distinction as the Pitbull of comedy. He's at once Pitbull-like and funny. He's been a longtime Las Vegas headliner who had his own residency at Hooters quite some time ago in the Night Owl showroom over there. And on August 21st through the 23rd, he is headlining at South Point Showroom. Here to talk about all of that or some of that and some other stuff is my buddy, Bobby Slayton. Bobby, thanks for calling in.
Johnny Kay, by the way, first of all, there's a lot of things I have to tell you. You've been doing this radio show now for a year, 2 years.
I'm finally happy.
What did you go through? Every ventriloquist, every half-assed puppet show on the strip before we have nobody left to get.
We have had one ventriloquist. We have not had Jeff Dunham on the show.
Okay.
We have not had Jeff Dunham, so you beat Jeff Dunham in. We have not had many magicians. We haven't had Jan Reuven in. We haven't had David Copperfield in. We have not had the guy downtown whose name I can't remember. Mike Hammer, okay. He hasn't been on. Yeah, there's quite you've beaten quite a few out, Bobby.
All right, yeah, well, I like to look at people favorite. That beat me. But anyway, the cup's always half empty. All right, wait. I'm happy to be here. You know, it's funny that it's Friday night. I very rarely do I have a weekend off, and to be home for a week. By the way, it's Bobby Slayton and Friends because I'm so insecure about selling out to South Point that when I was there Super Bowl week, they booked me. I go, listen, Bobby Slayton and Friends, because I want to. Stuttering John, used to be on the Howard Stern show. But this time, I don't know if you know Lenny Clark, who was on Lenny Clark for 8 seasons. Yeah. Oh, Lenny's great. He never plays Vegas. And Jim Florentine, who's great, the last episode of Louie, he's a comic that got killed. So, I think my friends would be funnier than me. It's going to be an amazing show.
All right. And this is the second or third booking you've had over the South Point, right?
Second one. Why can't I talk to the dish? Where is she?
She's in Montana. She fled when we announced you as our guest. She took off.
I have that effect on broads. I do that to the ladies. And by the way, it's funny. Trish, the dish.
Do you know Dish? Have you met her before?
But I don't know why you don't go by the name Johnny Kay. I don't know why you insist on that whole Castellamides thing, which
I don't
pronounce. That you can't even pronounce it. You've been living in that body for 40, 50 years, and every time you say your name, you stutter on all the consonants and all the letters.
You told me it should be Johnny the K as Murray the K, right? The fifth Beatle?
Well, I don't think you need the middle name. I think Murray the K, who is the fifth Beatle, for anybody over 50 who might get that reference. But Johnny K just sounds like, Johnny Quest or, Superman or Flash Gordon. It's Johnny K, Johnny the K.
Maybe I'll be Clark Kent.
You do what you want with it.
I think Murray the K is no longer with us, first of all.
He's
passed away. But and John K is the singer for Steppenwolf.
That's right. But there are, I'm more aware of that.
So there's a confusion there.
But there are other, you'd be Johnny K, not John K.
Johnny K. I'll work on that. I'll wheel it around the city a little bit.
I'll run around.
You got
Johnny K live. The radio show has more pizzazz when you do something like that. That's my opinion.
You know who Trish is related to? Do you know her story?
Yep.
She's a sister. Her sister is married to Wayne Newton. She's Wayne's sister-in-law.
Lucky her.
Yeah, that's how we met each other is through Wayne Newton. So
wow.
You're really missing out.
You're full of showbiz history. my grandfather was.
I'm full of showbiz history.
My grandfather was Bugsy Siegel.
Your grandfather was not Bugsy Siegel.
Okay, but that would have been a great story if he was. That would have been better. That would have been great.
I was calling the bluff. So tell me, what was it like being the grandson of Benjamin Bugsy Siegel? Why aren't you playing the flamingo if that's the case?
But anyway, listen, so let's get back to me if we can. So I am not only excited about playing South Point, you couldn't make it out last time I was there. It was Super Bowl weekend.
Yes.
We did a few nights. Now we're going to do 3 nights, and I think that it's great. Vegas in the summertime is very hard because it's one of the slowest times in August. But the thing I love about the South Point, and how much I love Vegas. I was at Hooters and I was at the Tropicana for a while.
Yeah, you had your own room.
Little the comedy club. But you know what? I have great history in Vegas. We did that Rat Pack movie with Ray Liotta. But the thing about the Strip, it's become so horrendous. Not the hotels themselves. Once you get off the Strip, I go see my buddy Anthony Cools in Paris and go up and drink at the Bellagio and have like a $30 Heineken. But when you're on the Strip, it's horrible. especially on a weekend. It's, you know, if Bugsy was alive today, you know he's turning over in his grave right now just knowing what happened to his Las Vegas. Number one, you get homeless people dressed up like SpongeBob and Spider-Man trying to take pictures with people. This is how Las Vegas hides all the problems. Illegal immigrants, what they do is they give them the hooker trading cards, the dollar an hour.
They're hookers?
Litter.
Really?
What's that?
They're hookers? Those trading cards?
Well,
I didn't know that.
They are. They're lovely ladies.
I didn't know that. I thought they were just escorts. All right,
well,
continue.
You know, anybody that comes to your room and doesn't have a pizza in 30 minutes, you know, is a little suspicious.
I guess
you know,
I haven't been looking at the cards closely enough.
And then you got so many fat people on the strip. I think on my last special a couple years ago, I did a thing about how Vegas is, you know, the fattest city in America. And when you walk down the strip, that's why it seems so crowded. There's so many fat people that it's really only half as crowded as it appears to be. It's a lot like Disneyland.
Yeah, it is. And you're right about the that comparison is very apt when you look at someplace like Times Square. I was in New York not long ago, and I was at Times Square. Way worse even than the Strip with all these costume characters. I think this is a universal problem, not just a Las Vegas problem. I think there are anywhere there's a on the Sunset Strip in Los Angeles. They're trying to make a buck this way in all populated areas. I don't know when it started, but it was a thing.
The Sunset Strip almost sort of a little bit has a little bit of the allure. You know, they still got the Whiskey A Go-Go, and you know they still have a couple of really good restaurants. But the Strip, I mean, Times Square is an abomination. You know, I think what that idiot Giuliani did to New York was he didn't clean it up. He destroyed it because Times Square, Travis Bickle, taxi driver's Times Square, while it wasn't the best place to bring a kid, you know, for his prom.
It was not a very great place to bring a kid. No.
But you know, when you walk through that place and there's the Olive Garden and the Red Lobster and Chuck E. Cheese, you know, what happened to the hookers? What happened to the strip clubs? What happened to the, you know, the game parlors? And, you know, it had that old New York City, you know, Broadway. It was, but what are you going
to
do?
Now you find people who are dressed as Travis Bickle trying to take photos with you.
Yeah, I know. It's Times Square. Well, that's kind of cool. That's kind of neat. That's the Johnny K I remember. Zing, zing, zing. That's why I don't stop talking.
You know, I met you at the club at the first time I ever saw you. I don't know if I met you this night, but it was maybe a decade ago or longer. It must have been longer than a decade ago. You were playing at Catch, I think, at Excalibur.
That had to be a solid 10 years ago. I wonder where that club was. It was the Excalibur.
It was the Excalibur.
And I remember something happened. It was some crazy broad. Were you there that night?
You came off the stage that night, and it was at the end of your performance. But I think that God, what happened? You came off and did not do a meet and greet afterwards. You didn't do any post show. Something did happen up front, and we were in the back. I can't recall what it was, but I remember that you just came off the stage and just left. And I think you do a meet and greet, don't you?
You know what?
I was there.
All the time. I do it at the South Point. You know what it is, too, that for the most part, considering the kind of act I do, which I guess can be a tad aggressive, can be a bit confrontational.
Somewhat.
Can be a little occasionally over the top. All the
hint of
I played Hooters. I would have thought that Hooters would have been the most... When you see the guys, you know, with the 95-cent Budweisers and their giant belt buckles and their, you know, their derringers and their boots and you know, it wasn't the classiest joint in the world, but you know, the people that came in there to see my show, very rarely do we have a problem. We never had any more problems than anybody else would have in Vegas. We had a bunch of drunk idiots or, you know, there would be people that get offended once in a while, but for the most part, I think when people go to a comedy show, and I'm still surprised. It was like that thing that Jerry Seinfeld talked about a few weeks ago, you know, in the news about how he never plays colleges because they can't pay him $100,000 a night. That's why, Jerry. But and then Bill
UNLV
Moore
can't.
What's that?
UNLV can't.
Yeah,
that's why he's at the Coliseum.
Sure. And I don't think Harvard wants comics, but you know what it is? It's become so crazy out there that you would think the comedy club or the comedy show would be the last bastion of civility. And I think when people, that's what I love about the South Point. I only played there once, but we did a few shows Super Bowl weekend. And yes, there were a couple of drunks in the back. And yeah, there were a couple of people dropping glasses. That's going to happen in any group in Vegas. You know, there's going to be assholes. You said that on the video, you can believe that. But there's going to be just jerks everywhere.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's not just in comedy shows. You know, you run into them everywhere. Police officers run into drunks and idiots, athletes, and everybody that works at a shoe store. The world is full of horrible people. Tell me ISIS has the right idea for killing Americans.
Yeah, well, that might seem a little extreme to, in some circles, but well,
they
want to
kill all Americans. I'm just saying
yeah,
some Americans.
Just
not
some.
They're
select
kind of
group.
Deep in those people.
Tell me a story about dealing with a heckler. Give me a classic example of how you had to deal with a heckler over the course of your career, because you've been doing this for a long time, 30 years at least.
Oh, my God. You know, for the most part, you know what's funny, too, when you play a club? I'd say 80% of the time you get a heckler or you get a drunk, they're always right up front. They're always up front. I don't really deal with hecklers very much anymore because I think at least in comedy clubs and theaters, they get tossed out right away and people have sort of almost kind of been trained. They don't want to mess with me. But sometimes you do get an inebriated woman, and you know, you've heard me say this on stage, when a woman drinks, it's like feeding gizmo after midnight. Some guys can handle alcohol and some guys can't, but women can handle it never. And so you do a few jokes about women, and you do a few jokes about marriage, and, you know, sometimes there's a guy defending. He's like a knight in shining armor trying to defend his fiancées, or they're newlyweds, or they're good Christians, or they're really drunk. And, you know, so sometimes I ignore them, and they get thrown out. But I'm not the kind of guy that can ignore people. You know, I just kind of dig my heels in and go after them. And one of the best examples, oh, my God, I was hosting years ago. I have a story that's going to come out in my book. I was hosting the Bay Area Music Awards, which is San Francisco's version. They don't do it anymore. The Grammys, you know, where they gave awards to all these great and not so great San Francisco and Bay Area bands, because, you know, San Francisco, I mean, years from Joan Baez, the Grateful Dead, and the Jefferson Airplane and Starship, on to, you know, Journey, the Doobie Brothers, Santana.
Right.
It took smaller bands like the Tubes and Greg Kidd and the Rubidoux, and so many groups and bands, Metallica, came out of the Bay Area. So every year they do their little version of the Grammys, and they give an award to Best Guitar Player, and it always went to Santana, you know. They'd always give the same awards to the same people because as rich as the Bay Area is in music, there weren't that many awards to give to that many different people. So I hosted it one year, and I had a joke about Journey, and they're sitting up front, Neil Schon and Keith Perry, just not nice guys. They just didn't get my jokes. And
okay.
So I walked backstage in between, you know, introducing Joe Montana and Herb Cain and Bill Graham and all these illustrious presenters, and they decide to throw champagne. So, you know, I'm backstage. I have another drink. I think back in those days I was doing blow. I do another line of Coke. And C. Wable from the Tubes and Grace Slick. Bobby, you're going to take that crap from those guys? Go get them. And I'm like Jake LaMotta, you didn't get me down, Ray. And I go back for round two. And I couldn't leave well enough alone, you know, that I just kept attacking. And that would have been the show where probably I should have ignored those guys and talked to the 8,000 people that were in, you know, the arena and just ignored Journey throwing champagne corks at me. But, you know, that's what happens when I get a heckler. I just can't let it go. And sometimes they back off and they go, I'm sorry, but I just keep kicking them until they're dead.
So what were the responses from Steve Perry and Neil Schon?
Well, dare I ask? Show, you know, Bill Graham sent me this great picture. You know, he has me giving the finger to Journey backstage when everybody's waiting to take pictures. And Bill Graham, the late great guy who wrote the book on rock and roll promotion, sent me this great picture that's in my office of me with my little Jufro from the 80s. And Bill wrote on it, and he described, nobody ever said this job was going to be easy, and that's what makes it what it is. You know? And then he was killed in a helicopter crash a few months later, and I was working for him, you know, up at his clubs in the Bay Area. So I'm full of showbiz stories. They might not be these rich stories that Joey Bishop or Frank Sinatra had, but they're going to all be in my book.
What's the book? Tell us about that.
I'm pushing it out today. You know, Trish wishes she was here today to hear this.
She'll hear it. Don't worry. Well, tell me about the book. What's the progress on that? What's it called?
It's called Raging Bully, which is the title of my first CD that my wife came up with. My 40 years in showbiz hell. And even though my life has been fine, I'm working constantly, I'm always working on new material. Hey, I'm coming to Vegas next week to play the South Point. But I have had more bad luck in showbiz. You know, when people finally make it big, oh, I paid my dues. Nobody paid the kind of dues I paid. You know, I mean, yeah, the Marx Brothers, you know, ate one sardine on a hot plate for a month when they were doing, you know, traveling on the country doing the vaudeville stuff. But every pilot that I've done, everything that almost went, didn't go, you know. And not like I'm battling cancer, like, you know, Tig Notaro or something, or, you know. But, you know, everything I've done is just all these great stories. probably don't know this. I was a voice of the Pink Panther when they decided to have a Pink Panther talk for the first time in the 80s. I was a voice of the Panther. The best voice of the Pink Panther. It was a great pilot with Charlie Schlatter and Terry Hatcher. Then the pilot never went because the president of CBS got fired or quit. New guy came in and nixed all the pilots. Pretty funny. You know, I was on the original Gong Show. Remember the Gong Show, how great that was?
Yes.
It was America's Got Talent without the talent. And that's why I was on it. And my friend and
you were competing on it, you mean? Or were a judge?
Yes. I was competing on the original Gong Show.
Oh, my God.
And it was great. But I they would always give the award, the Gong Trophy, to some treacly, you know, Linda Ronstadt wannabe doing some song like Feelings or something. The comedians never won. So it was back in the 80s when cloning was first in the news. And my friend and I, David Castro, who's helping with my book, we came out as Lone Ranger and Clone Ranger, dressed exactly alike, and did 50 impressions in a minute. Because all these one-man shows were going on Broadway. And we said, well, we have a lot of heroes and a lot of idols. And we did the most ridiculous act ever, with about 50 impressions in a minute. And we won because our judges were all comedians. It was Pat McCormick, the late Pat McCormick, who was a writer for The Tonight Show, and Johnny Carson, and The Unknown Comic, and J.P. Morgan. So we won the Gong Show. And what you won was the AFTRA scale. You got paid. So we got paid $700 each. And all these prizes. What I didn't realize at the time, and a lot of people don't even know this now, that if you win, let's say, a car, let's make a deal. If you take that car, which a lot of people, you got to pay a couple of $1,000 in gift tax and, you know, state tax, and prize tax. So they'll give you cash settlement, which is a lot. We didn't win a car, but we won all this garbage that I couldn't use at the time. Turtle wax for my car. I didn't have a car. I was living in this little walk-up tenement apartment in San Francisco. I got a $200 rug shampooer that I gave to my neighbor because I didn't have a rug. I got $100 in the frozen shrimp, which you couldn't find in the grocery store on the West Coast, so I sent it to my mother back in New York. Meanwhile, my prizes came to like $1,000. I didn't keep any of them. I got paid from the IRS. Hey, you know, you owe us money, like $300 in taxes. And I'm going, you know, F you. I didn't keep any of these prizes. Why should I pay on them? 10 years later, I go there. It's like $4,000 and $1,000 worth of crap I never kept. So, little story like that. And dozens of them. My God. And so I think it's really funny. I don't know.
Tell me about your experience over at, I want to ask about both places where you had residencies here briefly in Las Vegas. First place was Hooters. And I think you were there, I believe you started in 2006.
2 years.
In 2006, is that right? Do I have that right? 2006?
Yeah, about 4 or 5 years ago. No, yeah. Maybe longer. I mean, you might be right. I don't know.
2006, seven, whatever. Whatever it was.
But you know what? Hooters paid me a lot of money, and everybody said they're not going to pay you any money, because a lot of the comics and performers on the Strip, as you know, outside of maybe Carrot Top and Penn and Teller, a lot of the resident performers don't all get salaries. They two-wall it, they four-wall it,
right.
As you know, you know, they get a portion of the door, or they get all the door, and the hotel gets a drink, so they pay for advertising, they rent the room. I didn't have to pay for anything, and they were paying me a great salary. And I was making crappy money in the comedy club. So for a year, you know what I did? I overpaid my opening act. I paid my opening act money that all the comedy clubs in Vegas hated me because I was paying my opener to do 20 minutes when they were paying their headlining comics. And I said, these guys deserve to make a living. And I would take them out for dinner. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, and I don't want to whine about this, but when you make close to $1 million, which is great money, and you're in that tax bracket, and you're paying a manager, and you're paying an agent, and you're paying a publisher, and you're paying your opening ad, and you have a house in L.A., and you go out for dinner every night, and you take people out for dinner, because I've never had money before. $1 million goes away very quickly.
Yeah, you know? When you put it that way, it absolutely does. Who are some of your openers there at Hooters? I don't recall them. I can't remember who was opening for you.
I had one guy. Well, you know what happened with it? I was using a lot of comics. And they'd be calling me up at the last minute. Oh, Bobby, I got Hollywood Squares on Wednesday. I got to come in Thursday. Or I missed my flight. Or, hey, can I got to take Friday off because I got a big audition. I'm going, you know what? I'm not a comedy club booker. Screw this. I don't need to deal with this crap. So I hired one guy who I still use as an opener, not in Vegas this time, a guy named Robert Duchesne, who lived in the hotel, did a show on the show, 10 minutes before the show, did his 20 minutes, always killed, and didn't have to worry about him.
Uh-huh.
You know? But you know what? Vegas, Hooters was, I have a chapter about Hooters. It was a mental asylum. I felt like Jack Nicholson once flew over the cuckoo's nest. Once I worked there, you could call the box office. The people at the front desk didn't know how to hook you up to the box office, or they didn't know what my show times were, and some of them didn't even know who I was, even though my face was plastered all over the hotel. It was a nightmare. The place was a mental asylum. But you got to remember something. Right before I got there, they closed their sushi bar. Because, first of all, Hooters serves sushi. And when you call your sushi bar the bait shop, I don't think that's a very appetizing name for a sushi bar, the bait shop. So that's the mentality of the people around. Yeah, it was a great kind of CEO, but you had people there that it was really like dealing with these inmates. I mean, but they were paying me well. I did my show, you know. They paid for an apartment next door. I shopped at Whole Foods. So life was good. And then I moved over to the Tropicana, which is a total nightmare.
Now, tell me about that. You had, now, if I can remember this right, you moved over to the Trop and had the room that became later Brad Garrett's room, right? Is that the same spot about?
Well, let me tell you what happened, because my contract at Hooters is over. And I hear, I don't know, I haven't read his idiot book, but this mentalist idiot, Jerry McCambridge, who was, you know, going on before me, who didn't get paid any money, nothing. I think he had to sell his DVDs after the show. Somebody told me that he just wrote a that he drove me out of Las Vegas. Who doesn't have money to pay me anymore? $500 million to pay me. So that's a bad man. Whether that was true or not, I don't know, but that's what I was told. I'm not going to buy his book.
Right.
Went up in the truck, and there were some really nice people running the place. You got the guy's name. He said, Bob, you're going to have to four-wall the place. But I went into Comedy Stop at the top. The guy that was there, Bob Kephart, they kicked him out. He owed them a lot of money, from what I was told. So they kicked Bob Kephart out, and he was there for many, many years doing really well because it was $19, I think, for the show when you got two drinks along with the show, or $21.95 and two drinks. You can't top that anyway. So my show was a little bit more, $30-$40, and, you know, I fixed up the room the best I could, and then the guy that was running the casino left, and this guy Alex came in with a whole new regime of these stormtroopers, and there were any other shows inside the hotel. And next thing you know, they're putting in The Sopranos' Last Supper and a hypnotist and puppets and more magic. And they have all these shows going on in the hotel. And me and Anthony Cools supported me. They gave us very, very, very little support. So we kind of had to take off and get out of there right away. It was the worst 6 months of my life.
Yeah, it was. That was when the hotel was taken over by Onyx, and the CEO was Alex Yemenidjian. At that point, right? That's about the period of time that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, well, I have nothing nice to say about those people whatsoever, so I'll keep my mouth shut. Probably have me killed. But I hear they're not there anymore. So
they've sold the hotel, yeah. They've
Well, what a surprise, because the place was a rat hole, and it was going downhill fast. And I had 6 months there, man, where I tried my best. And, you know, the town of Las Vegas is very good to me, the concierges, and you know, you and Mike Weatherford, you know, Las Vegas Sun, you always gave me great write-ups. And Weatherford was always great to me. And Norm Clark.
Mm-hmm. All friends.
And again, you're putting me on, look at this, I'm on the dish. You know, all your imaginary listeners are going to show up to my show. It's going to be terrific.
In this case, it might be a good thing. But where have you been performing ever since the era of up to the Tropicana? You've been at Harrah's, I know, right? You've performed over there.
You know, I played the Harrah's. And I played... I was supposed to go back, you know, to the Riv. I was going to play their club again, but you know what happened to the Riv? They went under.
Closed.
I know. That's right. But you know, I've been playing around the country. You know, if people go to BobbySlayton.com. You know, I play the Improvs, the Funny Bones, and a few corporate one nighters here and there. You know, I hustle, man. Mm-hmm. I hustle to make a living. I do all the podcasts. I just did Marin's, Jay Moore's. Just got to do what you got to do. You know, until you nobody wants a 60-year-old Jew, but they give all the shows to the young people and. Who, you know, do the Comedy Central roast and Amy Schumer, and God bless them, you know. It's tough out there in the comedy world. But you know what? I just cracked open a bottle of wine. I'm sitting in my heated pool. Life is good. I'm playing the South Point next week. It doesn't get better than that.
And is the South Point going to be something you're going to come back to a couple times, three times a year, do you think, in that show? That's a fairly big room.
It's a really big room. We did great Super Bowl weekend when I had Jackie and the Stuttering John on the bill with me. But the hotel was packed. You know, August, we'll see. Not a great month for, you know, visitors. And I'm hoping the locals will show up. More all your imaginary listeners, if half of them show up, will be sold out.
You know, you mentioned earlier Penn and Teller, and I actually saw Jackie the Joke Man in New York at their opening party. I ran into him back in at the Marquee Theater, and I had met him on Super Bowl Sunday after your show.
Oh, right, right, right. He came over to Jeff's house.
Jeff Mullins' exactly. Legendary Super Bowl party. And I turned around over there by the barbecued wings, and there's Jackie the Joke Man right standing right behind me. So I ended up seeing him that way.
Yeah, he did a great job at my show. He had a great time. I loved him. And I brought him up to Penn's house to do Penn's Sunday School podcast. And mm-hmm. He could have been great. He's like me. He's one of those guys that's been around for a long time. Has a lot of stories, you know, we've both been doing comedy about probably 35, 40 years each. And so,
yeah,
you know, we all know the same people. We played some of the same horrible clubs. He's got great stories about working for Howard Stern. And, you know, I took him over to my friend's house in New York a few months ago. I did it with Woody Allen. And Jackie was always telling Woody, regaling us with stories about, you know, because they both used to play Pip's Comedy Club.
Oh,
Woody,
geez.
Of course, before... back in Brooklyn,
uh-huh.
No longer there. But we
talking
had a
like
great
in the
time.
50s, right? For Allen.
56. No, actually, yeah. Pips went to the 90s. Maybe it was about 10 years ago. But so Jackie is me and a few other comics. And Woody loves to hang out with comics and hear stories about mm-hmm. comedy. He's a good guy.
Yeah, that's where he got his start, huh? Well, we're going to have to wrap it up here. Bobby Slayton, Pitbull of Comedy, you are at the South Point Showroom from on August 21st, 22nd, and 23rd.
And Sunday night, that'll be a tough one to sell, but I think now, with Johnny K...
We'll bring the entire conga line in there. We'll bring
beautiful, baby. Am I going to see you next weekend, by the way?
I hope so. Yeah, you should see me one of those nights. You should see me one
All
of those
right.
nights. I'll come in and I'll rush the stage.
Don't make me call Doug Elfman and invite him and give him front row. Don't
hey,
make me do
I'll
that.
Bring Doug with me. Maybe we'll both go. Maybe me and Weatherford and Doug and Norm and the whole caravan will come down and we'll all heckle you.
Yeah, sit there with your pens and your pads of paper to really intimidate the comics.
Here's something. You never want a group of journalists sitting together at your comedy show. You don't.
Shaking your head back and forth.
Yeah, that's it. It only breeds cynicism. All right, Bobby Slayton, you're one of the greats. I thank you for your time, and I'll see you when you get into town.
All right, man.
Take care.
Talk to you.